show. And now, your host, Gary Mill.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to find out how any amount of running is linked to significantly lowering your risk of death. Who says? Well, the British Journal of Sports Medicine, a study done at Victoria University in Australia. I'm going to do a shorter segment today on health, lots of good studies, but I'm going to spend more time today with our Conversations with Remarkable Minds. We have live on studio in studio today, Danny Sheehan, in my opinion, one of the three most important constitutional scholars who are willing to talk to the deep state issues. And we will be taking on the deep state today. Tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we're taking on Google, the beginning of our battle against what we consider the Death Star of the Internet. And with a lot of details you have not heard before, including a whistleblower who will tell you in his own words why he's afraid. Why, is he paranoid? Is it reasonable? Unreasonable? In all my years in radio, never once did I have someone say that they should spread the information and have more followers so that it's going to be less likely that they'll assassinate him. Well, that doesn't sound reasonable. But does he have something he fears? Does he have inside information when he worked at Google for 10 years as a chief engineer and he took documents out? Are we aware of all that? We will be aware tonight. It'll be a really searing program. And then tomorrow we take on the New York Times. It'll be the beginning of a five-part series in ways that no one's ever taken them on before. You have to deal with the substance of your argument. You have to be able to validate it, back it up, have good quality sources, and at the same time show that they have been consistently on the wrong side of truth, journalistic integrity, and the issues. We will be doing that tomorrow. The following day, we'll be taking on, once again, Wikipedia. And I didn't realize how many we had done. We're up to 67 communications, articles, and letters to Wikipedia, 67, on our way to 150. We are also reexamining some of the other important issues that we have to deal with on upcoming programs. Let's begin. Any amount of running will significantly lower your risk of death from any cause. That's remarkable. And that's one of the reasons that I've encouraged people in this audience, the older you get, the more you should be exercising vigorously. Now, you can't just go out and start that way. You have to build up. You have to know what your resting pulse is, your blood pressure, your blood sugar. You have to know, are you in shape and at what level, so that you'll know where to begin. But then it's a gradual process. And once your body develops a certain ability for stamina and muscle use, then you can increase it. Yesterday, in the evening, we finished up we're in our sixth week of an 8 weeks on-campus study, then 4 more weeks at people's homes. And we did skin fold measurements yesterday, all types of measurements, impedance, percentage of body fat, bone remineralization. I can say this at this moment. There has never been a study that I'm aware of that has caused people to remineralize their bones as thoroughly and rapidly as we've been able to do. And exercise is one part of that. We have people 95 years old who couldn't walk 50 feet are now walking 4 miles briskly on their way to what will probably be 10 to 12 miles by the time the study ends in 2.5 weeks. We have people who've had a 10% drop in their body fat. That's unheard of in this period of time. And as I tell them with each meal, you have no limitations on how much you want to eat. Eat as much as you want because it's the quality of the calories that counts. This is living foods. So exercise, you bet. We're 100% involved in this. So once again, this is being proven by quality scientific research, published in peer-reviewed literature, and that's the latest on that. Now, I'm also suggesting people take coenzyme Q10. Why? In this case, from Tabriz University in Iran, it reduces headaches substantially. This was published in the major peer-reviewed journal Nutritional Neuroscience. Now, think of all the millions of headaches every day in the United States. And, of course, most people are going to reach for an ibuprofen or some other form of, let's say, over-the-counter medication. And that's unfortunate. They shouldn't be doing that. Because migraines are neurological conditions, and they're severe. They're accompanied by symptoms like nausea, vomiting, sensitivity to light and sound and smell. And the main cause of migraines is still not identified. But migraines are inflammatory and commonly observed together. So when you turn off the inflammation in the body, that's good. And then you go in and give the cells in the brain and the heart more oxygen capacity. And that's what coenzyme Q10 does, that and L-carnitine. Then it's completely understandable how that crucial role in oxygen utilization and energy production within cells, especially your vital organs, I would add the liver in there with the heart and brain. So you can contribute to better cardiovascular health with coenzyme Q10. You can also, at 400 milligrams, you can also help, and this was against placebo, help turn off a migraine. From Penn State University comes a study about eating walnuts and following a low saturated fat diet can decrease overall health, heart disease substantially. So this is what Penn State University had to say. They're saying that, well, of course, we know that cardiovascular disease is the biggest killer of adults in the United States. And a recent study by the American Heart Association reveals that at least 50% of all adults in the United States have some form of heart disease. Let me repeat that, because it's in no newspaper. 50% of all adults in America have some form of heart disease, with high blood pressure being partly responsible for these high levels. Now, the rise in the number of people with hypertension is also due to the 2017 change to the American Heart Association's and the American College of Cardiology hypertension guidelines. What are they? According to the updated guidelines, hypertension has been redefined as a reading of 130 over 80 millimeters of mercury, compared to the previous established reading of 140 over 90. So I believe the new readings are far more realistic, and we should be paying attention to them. Now, the findings of the current study, published in the Journal of the American Heart Association, indicate that consuming walnuts, just a handful of walnuts, can help those at risk of heart disease lower your blood pressure. Also, they stabilize blood sugar. And interesting, I had a woman named Michelle, wonderful human being, down in Tennessee, and she came back to the last retreat. We had a retreat as a fundraiser for WBI in the middle of our longevity study, clinical study on aging. And the reason she came back is because she said that, you know, she had not stuck with the protocol and wanted to get back, get motivated, and she did, and brought her blood sugar right back down again, lost weight, feels great. But another woman is there who said that she heard Michelle on this program and was so motivated when she said that she dropped her blood sugar by 100 points in 1 week. By the way, there's no medicine ever created that can do that, that she decided to come. So there she is. She is got high blood sugar. And again, I don't talk with anyone before they get there. I'm not there to diagnose or treat anyone. I'm just there to help people maximize their health. So I say, how are you doing? She said, fine. And I said, you're going to spend some more time out on that road and walk more vigorously. And also, don't be taking anything after dinner at night. And she said she wouldn't. And so then her blood sugar within a week came down over 88 points in 1 week. So her inspiration by hearing Michelle made a difference in her. Now she's no longer technically diabetic. Now if she continues her current regime, which I'm sure she will, she's very motivated, then she will leave with no diabetes as a limitation to her life that she's had for years. So I just want to share that because one of the things that people do is they munch on nuts. We get nuts in the salads and the casseroles, and the nuts are in the protein shakes in the morning. So I just want people to know that you don't have to accept that there's nothing you can do with lifestyle and behavior modification to help your conditions. You can. And walnuts lower blood pressure, and that's a big killer, blood pressure. Also, well, let me just explain this. Central blood pressure refers to the pressure moving towards the heart, which the researchers believe is a reliable indicator of someone's cardiovascular risk. But it's also been posited that it could have been bioactive compounds, the fiber, or a different component in walnuts that is lacking in the fatty acids along from other sources. And so it was shown to be the walnuts that were the factor. And indeed, walnuts have phytonutrients, not just fiber, because you could have fiber and wouldn't lower your blood pressure at all. But it's the quality of the food. I remember one of the times I was trying to get the professor in my nutrition class to at least acknowledge that not all food is the same, even though they register it based upon its protein, fat, carbohydrate, water content, that it also can have the phytonutrients. And if you have 3 grams of sugar in an apple and 3 grams of sugar in a cola, the body will not utilize them the same. And this person says, no, 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 sugar, sugar, glucose is glucose, fructose is fructose. It doesn't matter what the source is. And I said, but it does. And here's the literature. It's the next time there was a class I took in the studies, the peer-reviewed study. Didn't matter. Just set them aside. So understand something. You're all in this audience. You're going to get your protein, fats, carbohydrates today. If you stop and ask yourself, what do you want to feed? Do you want to feed your heart, your brain, your liver, your musculature, your lungs? Then make the selection based upon them being living foods, not processed foods, not denatured foods, not polluted foods and dirty foods filled with chemical stabilizers and all the other things that we get when we process something that originally had nutrition and we mill it out. More raw foods, the more raw organic juices, the lower your blood pressure is going to go. That's simply the reality. And from the University of California, Berkeley, comes a study that when we're stressed, the deep sleep is not going to happen in the same way, and it will actually cause the rewiring of the anxious brain. What do I mean? I mean that a sleepless night can trigger up to a 30% rise in emotional stress. And that it's also true for people who have, let's say, night jobs. You're not getting the sleep you need. You're not getting the deep rapid eye movement sleep and the restorative sleep. And that can cause anxiety. That's why you need a good night's sleep every night. And 5-hydroxytryptophan and L-theanine can help with that. Also from Inha University School of Medicine, South Korea, they show that the lower the vitamin D level, which is not good, you can have a lot of problems with your thyroid gland if you're a premenopausal woman. So get your vitamin D to help your thyroid, and that will help maintain your weight, hormone balance, etc. And also, University of South Carolina has a study that shows that peppermint oil can be used to address esophagus disorders. And that was published in Digestive Diseases and Sciences. And they found that just taking peppermint oil can relieve symptoms of esophageal disorders, and including non-cardiac chest pain. That's good. That helps us. By the way, just a suggestion. Let's just say that you want a massage. A massage is good. And head massage is good. Reflexology on the feet. Well, a lot of times now people are using coconut oil, and that's fine. But why not put a drop of eucalyptus oil or lemon oil or peppermint oil in that? And suddenly you get the aroma of that peppermint or lime or lemon. It's just, it enhances the whole experience. Just something to think about. And finally, from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, published in the Journal of Child Nutrition and Management, vegan school lunches have 300% more fiber than meat-based entrees. So, vegan school lunches contain triple the amount of heart-healthy fiber found in standard entrees. And that's, our children need that. And if there's any school in this area where people are listening, anywhere in America or the world, and if you'd like to improve the menu, well, back in 1972, it was Montessori school, and then up in Harlem, we took a school and changed to a healthy, we didn't change the menu, we simply added to it vegan dishes and a lot of fresh different types of salads. They'd never had a radicchio in salads up there. They just had the standard iceberg lettuce. So once we changed the salads and changed the entrees and gave them a vegan chili, people really liked it. And when I say we, that was Gloria Swanson, the famous old actress and the co-founder, along with Charlie Chaplin, D.W. Griffin, and Mary Pickford, and Douglas Fairbanks Sr. I think Jack Oakey was also one of the founders of United Artists Studio. And she gave me a call, the clear blue one day, and I was on WMCA radio. And she said, "You got a big audience. I listen to it. A lot of people listen to it. Would you help me put together a menu that's very nutritious?" And I did. And because of her personality and her contacts, she was able to get it implemented. We should be doing that everywhere in the United States. Every school should have a program of offering healthier alternatives. So, just a thought. Oh, and by the way, exercising also lowers your risk of colorectal lung cancer. This is from Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. And so just exercise. Lung cancer, colorectal cancer, among the most diagnosed cancers and one of the most fatal. So exercising can reduce the risk of lung and colorectal cancers. And that's good for everyone. Oh, I'm going to talk tomorrow about 4 reasons why you're always hungry. But that's tomorrow. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come back. When we come back, we're going to take a little, a 2-minute break to hear about honest government. And there's a coal mine, very famous coal mine in Australia. And this is kind of a metaphor for all coal mines. Back in a moment.
Government is always proud to be at the cutting edge of innovation. That's why instead of the NBN and renewable energy, we're bringing you the very latest from 19th century technology, coal and rail. Introducing the Carmichael Coal and Rail Project, a coal mine plus a train. Innovation. Once completed, it'll be the hugest new coal mine in the world. Which is grouse, because as we know, coal is good for humanity, whereas renewables cause lightning and child drownings. To make, we'll also be guided by the latest in 19th century methodology, colonialism. That's why we're disregarding the protests of the Wangan and Jagalingu traditional owners, who, just like those pesky natives at Standing Rock, are standing firmly in the way of Alk to defend their sacred country and waters from obliteration. By combining and colonialism, Australia is getting rid of many great barriers to progress, such as the Great Barrier Reef, which we'll dredge to make room for our expanded coal terminal. It's already half-fed anyway, and nobody likes likes to see a job half done. The Great Artesian Basin, which will freely drain and contaminate, will also help get rid of our current climate by digging up and burning 2.3 billion tonnes of coal, when we've been warned that the only way to avoid disaster is to keep that in the ground. To achieve all this, we've hired an offshore company with extensive experience in human rights abuses, environmental destruction and corruption. Adani. When you put all this together, you can see why it meets our full 4-star world rating. And that's why we've given critical infrastructure status, which allows us to ignore any concerns you might have in order to fast track it to completion. Why didn't we give the NBN critical infrastructure status? What a silly question. The answer, of course, authorised by the Ministry of 19th Century Solutions for 21st.
Okay. By the way, if you want to watch any of these, write this down. You can go to youtube.com/PRNFM. youtube.com/PRN.FM. And don't forget to take our number to listen over the archives, because most people do listen to this program over the archives. Write it down, please. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Now, I want to play you a clip before we get into our conversations in about 15 minutes with Danny Schechter. Excuse me. We're going to go to that clip right now. Then we'll come back for Danny. And this is Professor Claire Edwards. Now, we're not going to play the whole thing, but you can watch this. And later, you can, you know, go to our website, prn.fm, and it'll be right there for you. It's called The Madness of Putting 53,000 5G Satellites in Space. It's 24 minutes long. We're going to play you 10 of it now. The first part of it is very humanistically presented. The second part is very scientifically presented. She does a great job of blending the two. Let's go to that now.
This. So we've heard a lot of facts today. I didn't understand all of them, but I'm sure you did. So I actually don't want to present my presentation at this stage because I want to say something different. I'm here representing Gaia, representing Mother Earth. We all remain very much in the intellect, and we've heard a lot of facts today. But we need to move to the heart, because actually, for me, fifth generation, 5G, for me, it generates the principle of care. The reason that you are here today is because you care. The reason that I am here today is because I care. And everything I realize that I have been involved in this now for a number of years, 5G for the last 16 months. And what has driven me always is the principle of care, because I was working at the UN and they put up these public access points on the ceiling. And I knew that these would damage the people that I worked with. And I wanted to stop that. And so last year, I ended up going to the Secretary General and telling him that these were very, very dangerous. And he ignored me. And about a year ago, Professor Martin Paul submitted a document to ICNIRP criticizing their revised guidelines. And I edited that document, and a number of people sent comments. And there was one man in particular where I was going back and forth, picking up the comments and making a note of the comments. And I went and I opened this particular comment, and this man said, I am electro-hypersensitive, he said. I'm affected by this electromagnetic radiation. And this world is hell for me because nobody takes any notice. And if 5G comes, I may end my life. Well, I burst into tears. I cried and cried for 10 minutes about this man and how the world had abandoned him. So what always drives me is the principle of care. And the fact that you have come here today demonstrates that you also care. So I'd like to move now from the facts and the intellect, and I'd like to move to the heart, to how we feel about this. So take a moment, please. You've listened to the facts now. What do you feel? What do you feel in your solar plexus now about this? Because that is what drives you. And I am not driven by fear. None of us are driven by fear. This is not a motivator. Love is a motivator. And we heard earlier from Michael Chapman Pincher about the butterfly. This is the only insect that we love, he told us. And this is the only insect that survives electromagnetic radiation. There's nothing more powerful in this universe than love. And it's love that will save us from electromagnetic radiation. So we have the beautiful Earth. What you see here is our beautiful mother planet, surrounded by the space debris that exists already. So already there are millions of pieces of space debris up there. And one of the major, major considerations for the UN, I used to edit the documents in Vienna for the committee that deals with outer space. And their major concern was two things, space debris and weaponization. So year after year after year, they talked about the concern of space debris. And now we're faced with a situation where the plan is to put up 53,000 satellites in space. So this has to be disastrous. You can see here, this is the Earth. This is what our brain looks like, and this is what the universe looks like. As above, so below. Our brains function on the Schumann resonance, 7.83 hertz, which is the resonance of the Earth. We're connected to the Earth. I'd like you to take a moment to think about your connection with the Earth, your emotional connection with the Earth. For me, I often look up at a tree and I look through the leaves and I see the sun filtering through and twinkling, and the leaves are radiant green. And it moves me, it touches me. This is my connection with this planet. What's your connection with the planet? Take a moment to think about what is it that has particularly resonated with you. Is it your connection with water, with snow, with the trees, with the animals? What's your connection in your heart? What do you feel about your connection with your planet? And are you going to allow your planet to be destroyed? We have to think about not just the terrestrial 5G, but the fact that these satellites would surround the entire Earth and blanket the entire planet, putting everything in jeopardy. Not just humans, as we've heard, but wildlife, the entire environment. This is what we really care about. I talked to Cecil. I've been staying with Cecil, and she told me about being electro-hypersensitive for 35 years. Now, last year, I live in Vienna, and my friend in Vienna, Swedish friend, became electro-hypersensitive, and I watched this happen over just the space of 3 weeks. She became electro-hypersensitive. And we drove around trying to find a place where she was not tortured. She was tortured in her eyes, in her ears, every part of her body. She had buzzing organs. She couldn't function. And in the end, We slept in the woods in my car because I didn't want her to sleep alone in the woods. So we slept together in the woods for 2 nights because this was the only place where she could be free from the electromagnetic radiation. And in the end, she left Austria. Within 1 week, she had to drive away from Austria because she could not be there. She was tortured everywhere. So she left the country after living there for 30 years. And she left. And she left her children. She was divorced, but her children were still teenagers. So she left her family and she went back to Sweden. So this is the global electric circuit of the Earth. And Einar asked me to describe the mechanism by which the satellites would affect us. Well, what I found when I did the research is that just because we've named the global electric circuit does not mean that we understand it. We don't understand it. It's far, far too complex. And you need scientists from many, many different fields to study this. It's not understood. So what kind of madness is it to be putting up 53,000 satellites there when we don't know the consequences? So these are the companies that are putting up these satellites. And I think just last week, Musk and his SpaceX company applied for permission to put up 30,000 more. So now we have a total planned of 53,000.
Okay. We will continue with this clip on an upcoming program because now she gets into the actual science. And mind you, she's one of the world's leading authority on understanding space debris, projects in space. And she was lecturing at a group of scientists in Norway. And she tried to put a human face on this. If you really care about the planet, if you care about people, why would you engage them all in a human experiment, one of the worst human experiments in history? 53,000 satellites all beaming down 5G, when we know that 1G can cause brain cancers, and we're currently at 4G. Now all the ads on television are showing how hip it is. You know, they show you a commercial with all these real fast lights traveling throughout cities and connecting people, and people think, yeah, I want to be connected to everything in the internet. No, you don't. You don't want the smart meters. You don't want any of this, and yet we're being inundated with this. So I think that was very important. We have now on the line with us our guest. He has been on many times. This is a continuation of our conversation with the Remarkable Minds. And my guest, for many of you, is a person that inspires some deep thinking. His name is Danny Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N. And we're going to talk about the corporate coup in Washington and the public narrative, how they're controlling it, and how the media is complicit. Danny, quite simply, is one of our most important and influential constitutional and public interest lawyers. During the past nearly 50 years, he has handled some of the most important public interest cases, the Pentagon Papers, the Watergate break-in, Iran-Contra, this Karen Silkwood murder case, etc. And recently, he's been the lead attorney helping the indigenous tribes in North America fighting against the federal government and the states to prevent their property and sacred lands from being inundated with the oil being transported from up in the shale area of Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, down to the place where it's processed and then shipped out. Nice to have you with us, Danny.
Thank you, Gary. It's great to be here again.
Danny, before we begin, I'm going to play you a 1 minute and 30 second clip of something that I had not seen before today. This is an ABC news reporter being interviewed, not on ABC, but on RTV. I just want you to listen what she has to say.
I've had the story for 3 years. I've had this interview with Virginia Roberts. We would not put it on the air. First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story. Then the palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. We were so afraid we wouldn't be able to interview Kate it will, that we, that also quashed the story. And then Alan Dershowitz was also implicated in because of the planes. She told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything. She was in hiding for 12 years. We convinced her to come out. We convinced her to talk to us. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton, we had everything. I tried for 3 years to get it on to no avail, and now it's all coming out, and it's like these new revelations, and I freaking had all of it. I'm so pissed right now. Like, every day I get more and more pissed because I'm just like, oh my God, what we had was unreal. Other women backing it up. Hey, yep. Brad Edwards, the attorney, 3 years ago saying, there will come a day when we will realize Jeffrey Epstein was the most prolific pedophile this country has ever known. And I had it all 3 years ago.
Okay. I'm going to put this in larger context, and I'm going to give you one big question, Danny, and this is just a part of it. It is my belief that we have never been in a more precarious and perilous situation as we are right now, with the deep state no longer trying to hide itself. It is John Brennan, head of the CIA, who, by the way, was also, do you remember, he was the head of the CIA station chief in Saudi Arabia on 9/11. And was one of the people who did not want the Saudi papers, the first 28 papers, but it turns out it was about 60,000 papers, to come out. And to this day, doesn't want to see all that. We have Clapper, head of the National Security Agency. In fact, we have most of the different security agencies involved. We have the State Department involved, the White House involved. And behind these puppets, because that's all they are, puppets, they're part of the corporate group that controls everything in Washington, D.C. You see them in the Council on Foreign Relations, the Business Roundtable. If you go by the rules they establish, you will be rewarded. If you challenge them or threaten them, you'll be destroyed. Your reputation will be destroyed. So now we also had into this mix Google, Facebook, Wikipedia. You have virtually every major institution, the big cartels of energy cartels, financial cartels, and pharmaceutical cartels, the military-industrial complex, the media cartels. So when you put all this together, they win. They're able to say anything and do anything because they have the experts coming forward every day from the think tanks that are all ideological on MSNBC, Rachel Maddow, and the rest of these people are on Fox telling us what our truth should be. And the average person, unfortunately, is susceptible to that kind of convincing narrative. Now, here's a woman who had the goods on Epstein before his arrest, before all this happened and his so-called suicide, which I don't believe was a suicide. And yet not a thing was done to him. Bill Gates was still meeting with Epstein. The Clintons, everybody met with him after he had been in jail, after he had been convicted as a pedophile and given a slap on the wrist. And no investigations on him, no investigations on the truth behind Benghazi or the truth behind the Clintons doing the uranium. All these major scandals, all fully documented. Not a single person has been held accountable in any agency as long as they play by the rules. That's the deep state. And yet we're doing nothing about it, not even having honest discussions about the deep state. As a result, our rights are being eroded constantly. You and John Whitehead are the two people leading the way of showing us how this deep state works and why we should pay attention. The forum is yours.
Well, this is this issue that you and I have been discussing on the air here for a number of years. And what we see now, what we've actually come to see, is with the rise into power of Donald Trump, much to the surprise of a lot of the pundits, we see a person here who at first appeared to be more or less ignorant of the realities of the deep state, of the national security state. And he actually felt that he could come into power and take positions that were contrary to the positions of these people. And we actually now hear on the major news stations, even including MSNBC, that the fundamental challenge that Trump represents is that he had decided to undertake a foreign policy, a set of foreign policy decisions that was not supported by the CIA, the FBI, the National Security Agency, the leadership of the Republican Party, and the leadership of the Democratic Party. And what he's experienced is the closing down on him by all of these entities. Now, that's, again, that neither one of us is an apologist for Trump or the kind of really terrible kind of things he says and does. But what we have to really realize now is that we're on the brink of having a potential election coming up in 2020 in which it's conceivable, at least, that Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders could possibly win the Democratic nomination and possibly be elected. And they're going to confront the same institutions. And even though these institutions of the deep state, the various people you point out with Jack Brennan and Clapper and the other people in the deep state and the FBI and the NSA and the CIA, et cetera, and the Council on Foreign Relations, the Foreign Policy, Foreign Affairs Magazine, all of these people in the deep state that function will not allow an individual person who may accidentally come to power in the presidency get away with doing something different than what they want done. And what we see now, this kind of spectacular event that's taking place in front of our eyes of having people like Jack Brennan, the CIA director, FBI director, others, NSA directors like Clapper, all coming on looking like heroes. Why? Because they're openly opposing the President of the United States, who has been elected to power, and these people are all defying him and actually currying favor among people inside the military and inside the agencies to disregard his orders. Now, I don't agree with his orders. I don't agree with his policies. But I do, as a student of constitutional history and political history, realize that there is an extraordinary thing happening right now. What we're seeing is the actual coming forward into full public view, the exercise of power on behalf of this coalition of people who have, for the most part, stayed more or less behind the scenes, that they apply pressure to newly elected people at the House level and at the Senate level. And it comes to be known inside Washington, inside the Beltway, that there are norms, as they like to say, as Brian Williams likes to say on MSNBC. This is not so much a city of laws as it is a city of norms, he says. And these norms are set by these major industrialists and capitalists and financiers. And this has been going on, and we've talked about this before, this has been going on since the very beginning of our country, that there was this element in the country, basically coordinated by Alexander Hamilton, the financiers and the big business people interests that played a major role in conditioning the Constitution originally by, for example, not allowing regular people to vote if you weren't a white male landowner. They exercised their power inside the state legislatures, the early state legislatures of the colonies, to limit who could vote and participate in the government. They excluded black people, Native American people, women, of course. There was this elite that set these rules. On the other side, there were people like Jefferson and Madison and others who were pressing to try to expand the active participation in the government decision-making process of regular people. These became known as populists, and that this dialectic has been going on since the very beginning of the country, but it really rose to full prominence at the end of the American Civil War, when the fact of the matter is that the Civil War was not fought primarily for the purpose of freeing the African-American people from slavery. That was a secondary aspect of the war. It was a major confrontation between this elite core of people who were in charge of major industry in the United States that were attempting to seize control of the entire country. And the rural people, the agrarian people of the South, resisted this, and this war ensued. And at the end of the American Civil War, what we saw in every junior high school across the country, in every high school civics course, in every college course on American history, you hear about the age of the robber barons. That this period went on from 1868 to 1898, a short 30-year period. You know, we have to remember that this is like if you go back to just 1990 here. You know, that's 30 years ago now. The end of the Cold War, basically, was like 30 years ago. So this fairly short period of time, there was this huge surge into power on the part of some 30 to maybe 40 families. People have known a lot of the main ones, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the DuPonts and the others. But these people, and we've talked about this before, they actually organized themselves into a private investment coalition. Brown Brothers Harriman, a big private financial investment company on Wall Street. And they were members, they were investors in this common pool of investments. And the CEO of this particular group at Brown Brothers Harriman was, in fact, George Herbert Walker, grandfather to George Herbert Walker Bush, great-grandfather to W. Bush, that these people participated in coordinating their efforts together to end up seizing complete control of the major resources in the country. They created this new business vehicle called the shareholder-owned private corporation. And they pushed it all. They put their lawyers from these major corporations onto the courts of the country, and eventually got these judges to assert that the corporation was now a person and was entitled to all of the fundamental rights that any given human being would have. And they utilized this new business vehicle and these so-called constitutional rights that this entity had to fight off any attempts on the part of the populace to regulate the businesses, to restrict the businesses, to impose upon the businesses any kind of legal obligation to take responsibility for the activities of their companies, the polluting of the environment, the oppressing of workers, the punishing of workers who tried to organize. You know, that this element has been existent in the country since its inception. As I say, it rose to the fore during the robber baron era in this 30-year period, and it rose to power asserting the dominance of the United States. They were demanding that the instrumentalities of the federal government be put at the disposal of the interests of these major corporations. And you saw such things as in 1903, you saw the United States Military Expeditionary Force, you know, launched to go down into Nicaragua to overthrow the government of Nicaragua on behalf of the interests of United Fruit Corporation, which was a client of Brown Brothers Harriman. You saw various foreign ventures, the pushing out into the Pacific in 1893 and seizing Hawaii, seizing the Guam and the islands in the Pacific. You saw the pushing forward in 1898, the pushing into taking over Cuba and establishing major domination and control in Latin America. This part of history became known, again, even in high school and junior high school textbooks, as the age of American imperialism. And the problem is that people try to talk about it in the history books as though it were a matter of past history. And there was this kind of moment in American history for over 30 to 50 year period where there was this surge of these people trying to take over the government of the United States, and like it didn't happen successfully, but it did. And that's what we're facing now. And what we've discovered is that by the end of World War II, there began to be a whole set of agencies and regulatory agencies that the populist pushback attempted to put into place in the aftermath of the Great Depression of 1929. Franklin Roosevelt came to power and tried to rein in these corporations, tried to restrict their pressure on the American government to engage in foreign expeditionary exercises to gather and secure access to the resources, the natural resources of the world for these corporations. And when that pushback happened, this element, gaining control of the United States Supreme Court, insisted that they had fundamental constitutional rights, and it was a violation of the due process of law that belonged to these corporations as a, quote, person, that you couldn't regulate them like that. You couldn't tell them what to do. You couldn't restrict their right to spend as much money as they wanted buying legislators. You couldn't restrict what it is they said in their advertisements, no matter how untrue it was. You couldn't restrict them gaining control of an entire sector of the economy. For example, monopolizing control over the production of steel, monopolizing the railways, monopolizing shipping, for example, monopolizing entire areas of agriculture. You couldn't stop them because it was a violation of their fundamental rights to be able to participate in business decisions. Now, this period in history resulted at the end of World War II in the creation of an official national security state with the passage in 1947 of the National Security Act of 1947. This element that was in alliance with major reactionary forces around the world, including, as we pointed out in previous shows, Gary, direct alliances with the Fourth Reich and the fascist movement in the world that brought us World War II, that these elements were directly aligned with them. And when they set up the national security state through the CIA, that this entity existed as a deep state secret agency that was basically applying its activities around the world to, for example, overthrow the government in Iran in 1954 with Mossadegh, because they tried to nationalize the oil in Iran. You saw them overthrowing people in Central America because they attempted to gain access to their own natural resources to keep them from being taken and exploited by these major corporations. And then you started getting the National Security Agency after that, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Defense Industrial Security Command, NEST, the Nuclear Emergency Search Teams. You began to get this proliferation of all of these three-lettered agencies that all were part of the national security state. And the national security state was actually an instrumentality that was functioning to place under the control of the interests of these major corporations the instrumentalities of the state, the military power, the taxing structure, the legislative functions of the government. And what we see now, very, very interestingly, we see a person like Donald Trump has risen to a position of power who basically was displaying virtually all of the worst qualities and features of these robber parents, you know, completely selfish, completely self-aggrandizing, you know, completely disinterested in being restricted by any laws or any type of principles at all, completely devoid of an interest in the truth, basically saying anything that was necessary, like in the false advertising of the corporations, you know, drink coffee, it will calm you down. Smoke camels, they will make the girls love you. You know, buy a new Chevy, you know, and the women will flock to you. These kind of ridiculous advertisements that were viewed on their part to be a matter of their free speech. This phenomenon has risen to the point now where there's this very peculiar thing that's going on, that you get a person that epitomizes the worst features of this robber baron elite in the presidency, and he goes off the rails. He went off the rails so much that it actually began becoming clear to the general populace what was wrong with these people, what was wrong with the Republican reactionaries, what was wrong with the corporations, what was wrong with these major monopolies. The regular people began to see this. And even though these major corporations moved in to purchase the airwaves, for example, you know, General Electric, you know, makes the move to come in to buy up the communication systems. The other major corporations move in to get control of the media so the news wouldn't reveal what's going on. But what's happened is with the onset of the internet and the access to the free flow of a lot of information that's flowing around now, the obvious violation of fundamental principles of honesty and truth and integrity, care for the environment, care for human beings, that is being manifested by these major corporate elite right now, have generated a movement that starts characterizing them as the 1%, this elite 1% who have, you know, something like 85% of all the wealth of the United States, you know, that have overwhelming domination in decision making in the country. This particular cat has been belled, as it were, now by the internet media, and there's this populist movement that is rising in the United States to the point where we have one of the two major political parties that have historically been instruments of the corporate elite is now in danger, I quote, of being taken over by a genuine populist type movement with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren in a huge rising up of young people around the country in Sunrise, this major operation, and the movement for a Green New Deal. There's a huge surge of populism that is rising up now, and you're actually finding on all of the networks, CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, and even MSNBC, the kind of demonizing of populism, suggesting that all populism is kind of inherently reactionary and right-wing. They're trying to blame the rise to power of Donald Trump on this kind of populist right-wing grouping. The real danger of populism to the elite has always been from the left. It's always been a populist, a democratic, majoritarian type of authority that they're afraid of, because they know that they constitute an extreme minority of the population, and they want to maintain minority control over the instrumentalities of the state. So what we're really seeing here in the upcoming election, there is this major effort on the part of the Democratic National Committee to hold on to power as one of the two major powers run and controlled by the major financial elite here. That's why when you saw Hillary Clinton, for example, running, she was the head of the policy committee of the Democratic Leadership Conference, which was this whole major movement inside the Democratic Party at the end of the Cold War to shift the Democratic Party to the right of center, to follow the Republican Party, which right at the immediate end of the Cold War shifted to the hardcore right. They instantaneously returned to the ethos of the robber baron era that had preceded the Russian Revolution of 1917. There was that entire movement that was going on of the robber barons and American imperialism, etc., that ended up being confronted by the worldwide socialist movement based out of Russia. Now, that went off the rails and became Stalinist and authoritarian and disregarded human rights, etc. I was fortunate enough to be involved in having crafted the original position of the United States Jesuit Order, the largest order in the Catholic Church, condemning both capitalism for its unabrogated greed that was driving it, and condemning Stalinist communism as being completely devoid of any interest in individual human rights. We were trying to carve out a social, democratic, human rights grounded, theologically rooted view of human beings and what the source was
Danny,
of fundamental rights.
Danny, we're running out of time. I only have a minute left. I appreciate you sharing those overviews. I'd like to get you back for a full hour or longer on the Progressive Commentary Hour, but tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we have a whistleblower who is going up against Google. He worked at Google for 10 years, and he shared insights about how what they're doing that would scare, terrify us. And yet the mainstream media is thinking that this is all just a conspiracy theory. So all truths of all whistleblowers, no one on the left in the corporate media is protecting. They're not protecting Assange. They're not protecting Snowden. They're not protecting Caracalla. They're not protecting any William Benny and Drake and all these other people and Chelsea Manning. So the very people that expose corruption of the deep state, the military-industrial complex or different agencies, they're now considered the populace. They're to be shunned, denigrated. And it's interesting because Hillary Clinton and almost all of the core people on the left, except for Tulsi, want to see them punished. Now, what kind of mindset punishes people who've risk their lives to expose corruption, but the people who are corrupt are your friends and you hang out with them? That's the Clintons, that's the Bushes, that's the entire corporate and political elite in our society. And we're going to talk about that tonight. We're taking on the New York Times tomorrow. We're taking on Google tonight. We've been taking on Wikipedia. And I look forward to having you back for 1 to 2 hours to take them all on. All right?
Terrific, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And it's interesting because this guy tonight, he is afraid. Are his fears realistic? We'll find out. See if he's been hiding anything or too scared to tell people about what he knows. That's tonight, 7 o'clock, Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.